Today, the real issues behind the cash ban. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, welcome to our latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today I'm joined again by the CC's Robbie Warwick. Hi, Robbie.
Hi, Martin.
Now, this is a very important post, isn't it? Because something happened last Friday after 5 p.m, which I think people should know about, get across and react to.
Yes, the government has made its move on Australians using cash. This is the beginning of the war on cash, and we can't let them get away with it because this is the beginning. I can assure you, we can look at the legislation. They've obviously got many other things planned, but this is the beginning.
Yeah, and so just to be clear, we knew that this was coming, but there was a task force a couple of years ago called the Black Economy Task Force, and one of the recommendations there was to limit the size of transactions that could be made by way of direct cash transfers from individuals or individuals to businesses or business to businesses. And essentially, there were recommendations at that time from certain accounting firms that it should be as low as $5,000 or $2,000. And what's come out now is a draft bill, which came out after 5 p.m. on Friday for review. Review, by the way, in under 2 weeks or about 2 weeks, which is remarkably short given the significance of it. And, of course, almost no media coverage on this so far. And any media coverage is only focused on the immediate question about the cash transfer. So I think let's just deal with that and ask the question, is this really going to impact the black economy positively or not? And then let's go on to what is really the critical issue, which is to understand that this is nothing really about the black economy, about it. There's something much more fundamental going on here. Well, let's start with the first question. So Robbie, is this going to have any impact anyway in terms of tax avoidance and recovering more tax and the black economy?
Absolutely not. Now, I want to quote an authority, Friedrich Schneider in Germany, who presented a paper at the Deutsche Bundesbank International Cash Conference in 2017 called "Restricting or Abolishing Cash: An Effective Instrument for Fighting the Shadow Economy, Crime and Terrorism." He suggested that these thresholds have a negligible effect on illicit activity and would only reduce it by 5 to 10%. Now, I'll tell you why that is. Because the vast majority of money laundering and tax evasion is not done by tradies. It's not done by this stupid report, Martin, this Black Economy Task Force report. It says in there things like, it uses examples because it says we've got to change the culture. It says if you do things like slip a bit of extra cash to your hairdresser, you're part of the problem. All right? No. The vast majority of the activities that damage the economy are done by corporations, and they're assisted by these accounting firms, the Big Four: KPMG, Ernst & Young, Deloitte, and PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers. Everybody knows this. Every scandal going back for decades has involved those firms giving banks, especially, and other corporations a clean bill of health, right? And there's one Australian to ever become the global boss of one of these firms, Michael Andrew, the author of this report. And he's saying that because of that problem, he never admits to it, but his outfit is intimately intertwined with that. But we have to lose cash. No, that's not – so the 5 or 10% that might be cleaned up is not going to solve the problem. You have to – if you're serious about solving that problem, you've got to go after the big players. Yep. And I'll give you another example. Look at the 60 Minutes story on Crown Casino on Sunday night, right? Now, casinos are – washing machines for money laundering, for sure. Everyone knows that. But they're now going to use that as another reason to have this cash ban, except the real story of Crown Casino is not about cash, it's about corruption. They all know it's happening, right? There's a serving Victoria police officer, is the bodyguard of one of the crooks, if I can use that term, identified in that show, right? The crossbenchers in Parliament are trying to get some traction on it, but the two major parties are not interested because they're so much in bed with Crown Casino. And that's why that kind of money laundering gets to take place, not because we have cash in our economy, right? So when this ban that's going to be affect us, ordinary people, take away our rights to use cash. And what they mean is there's an explicit line in that in the report recommending this, Martin, which said the purpose of the cash ban, you know, in general, there's the general explanation, but specifically move people into the banking system. They are private banks, right? In other words, we lose our rights to use cash, legal tender, in our business dealings as individuals, and are forced to use private banks whether we want to or not. Now, I'm a firm believer in the banking system. It's very important. You know how important it is, better than anyone in Australia. But if you want confidence in the banking system, don't force people to use it. Make it something worth using, and people will use it, right? In other words, there's a lot of corruption in our banking system. Just clean it up. This is not the way to do it.
Yeah, and in fact, if you really wanted to go off to money laundering and all of those things, then you should be looking at the property sector, because there's a lot of bad money that cycle through the property sector. You should be looking at the commercial sector and, as you say, large corporations where the billions of dollars are actually washed through. And it's only a very small proportion, if you know, if it's quantifiable at all in the context of those other categories, that is actually being touched by this particular paper. So on any measure of effective legislation, it is dumb. Yep. But the reason it's there is nothing to do with with money laundering, you know, and terrorism and those sorts of things, really, is it? There's another agenda here, which I think we should probably move on to now.
That's the big issue. So we put out a statement about this. You and John Adams on your other channel have recorded a very important show going through the, especially in detail, the negative interest rate. But these are, what we have is unnatural acts in the banking system. We have a corrupt banking system that they've got it since the bankruptcy of 2008. You know, instead of reforming it, they've tried to prop it up, and they've introduced crazier and crazier policies. And the two we've identified as particularly taking the cake, particular assault on people, is bail-in, where, you know, we now have a system, instead of making banks behave properly so they don't get into trouble, they're allowed to gamble recklessly, but deposits can be taken to prop them up when they get into trouble in order to preserve financial stability. This is that, you know, financial stability is important above all things in this brave new world enforced by the Bank for International Settlements and Financial Stability Board. So they've got bail-in, and they've got, you know, this, in this era of central banks where they treat the economy like it's some global machine and there's little levers, and interest rates is one lever, and post the 2008 crash, they just hit that lever really hard and jacked them all down, and they think they've kept it going, but now it's wobbling again, and you know, pieces are flying off here, there. Oh, we've got to hit that lever more. Don't look at, I mean, part of the problem is thinking of the economy as a machine in the first place. Their assumptions about it are so bad, but oh, we've got to hit that lever more, but they're running into a problem. You're going to go negative. Well, that's so unnatural, as John explained quite eloquently on your show. No one lends money to have to pay to do that, right? You lend money for a bit of interest. You go negative. People are not going to because putting your money in the bank is a deposit. You're effectively lending your money to the bank. People aren't going to do that. They're going to take their money out of the bank. This was the experience in Japan. And so the IMF has been explicit. You have to have a cashless, move to cashless societies, keep people trapped in the banks in order for these kind of policies to work. So we say the problem is bail-in and negative interest rates. They're crazy, right? Let's get rid of those. But instead, no, take away people's rights, have forced the people to adapt to this crazy system, right? In a really draconian way. We're getting increasing layers of a police state on our daily lives here, right? And that's the real agenda. So we know, and we see these two specific things as interlinked. We know that 2 years ago, the government, in the same way they did this, they, on a Friday afternoon in August, They released the exposure draft of their bail-in law, which we identified as a bail-in law. We found it by a fluke, Martin. All right, someone on the other side of the door behind me, Doug, sharp-eyed guy, he saw the law on the Friday afternoon. He sent it to me and said, this looks like bail-in. And we began an intense mobilization then to try and stop it. Now, there was 2 weeks consultation. Normally, there's 30. We counted them up with these other consultations I do. They get about 30 submissions. We generated 250 submissions in those 2 weeks in 2017, in that initial period, right? With very little help, very little other exposure. We have to do that on a much bigger scale now on this. And for the comparison, so 2 years later, they've released it in the same way, late on a Friday. This time, it wasn't we in the CEC who found it. John Adams, our mutual friend, was tipped off by Helen Edwards. I interviewed Helen Edwards the other night. You can watch my interview with her on our show. I'll talk about that more in a minute. Helen didn't even find it. She was tipped off by a contact of hers with whom she engages on money laundering issues in North Africa. A random person in North Africa saw the Australian government, because it would have been morning for him, evening here, Australian government announcing a bill, probably had a Google alert or something, right, on money with the pretext of money laundering, tipped off Helen, Helen tipped off John tipped off me, we know about it and we can make a big deal. If without that, we know how this parliament works. They can easily sneak this kind of law through without anybody knowing, yep. Right? If the two major parties are in on it, it can happen without anybody noticing, right? Least of all the members of parliament. A handful of people can be in the chambers to wave this kind of thing through. So this, you know, this gives the game away, really, the way they're treating it in the same kind of sneaky fashion, and the fact that the effect would be to trap Australians into banks so that if a bail-in is imminent, people cannot get out of banks. Right? Now, what's that? This is a free market government. Whatever happened to choice? Whatever happened to the free market? Right, where we, the market, we have, you know, get to express our confidence in the system. No, that's all gone, right? And we use, you know, as we said in our press release, we use the term fascist. Fascism is use of state power to benefit private interests, right? These measures are the definition of that. And so we need to hit it and hit it really hard. I think we have an opportunity to be able to stop this one and begin a process of unwinding some of the others.
Yeah, well, it's very important that people understand that with negative interest rates, you know, the IMF paper that came out quite recently said you'd have to drop interest rates 3, 4, 5% to have the same impact as last time around, except we're now already at 1%. So that's negative 4, negative 5, right? That essentially means that any money that is in a bank, you will be paying the bank to hold that money in the bank, right? That's what it means. And if you try to get the money out and hold it outside the banking system, which is what many people did in other countries, for example, yep. You know, Japan, it essentially weakens the central bank's ability to be able to do what they want to do. So the intention there is that by essentially bringing in this restriction on cash transfers, it makes it harder to pull money, pass money from one to the other. In fact, if you go to a bank now and ask them for, a reasonable size withdrawal, they'll ask for a notice anyway. Quite often you need to give them 3, 4, 5 days to get the money together. So even now it's quite difficult, but this is effectively one more hurdle. So it's really, really important that people understand that this is not, you know, and it's not conspiracy. It's all this is documented. It's all available out there for people to read. And we have a limited but very important window to bring this out into the sunlight and get people to understand what's really going on here. Because essentially, once this bill is brought in, the way it's structured is quite clever, because essentially there's an overarching bill, but there's a whole bunch of, if you like, regulations underneath it, which can be changed subsequently and tightened subsequently without having to take the bill back through Parliament again. So effectively, the door will be open for much tighter controls and, you know, effectively dropping that 10,000 ceiling down to 2,000, 1,000, whatever it'll be. And spreading the web a little bit wider, perhaps even restricting things like Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, and maybe even physical gold as well. So there's, you know, there's no end to where this could be taken if we're not very careful. So it's really important that people, you know, understand and react. And there is a window to react, isn't there?
There is. One thing people need to be aware of based on what you just said is, politicians, if they choose to fight on this, and there's a chance they might not, they might see this massive public backlash that we're generating just by informing people, right, and go, oh, no, we better not touch that. But if they do, they will have all these arguments saying, and one of them will be, don't worry, this won't affect you, because you're right, there's the law and there's the regulation. The law bans all cash transactions over $10,000, all of them. But the government has already said on its page announcing this, but in practice, consumer-to-consumer transactions, you know, me buying a secondhand car from you, that's fine. You'll be fine. But that's in the regulation, not in the law. So the government, the politician who's choosing to defend this law will say, no, you won't be affected. It's just so, you know, you can't buy, use cash to buy from the car yard, right? Just so they're not evading the GST, blah, blah, blah. But understand that when they say that, that's in the regulation. That's not in the law. That can be changed at a moment's notice, right? Just on the whim of the minister. And the intention is, because the boss of KPMG wrote the Black Economy Task Force that the government says is the source of this recommendation for this law. Later, KPMG executives made this follow-up submission to the Treasury already in June last year, just after Morrison announced it in the budget, saying it needs to be reduced to 5,000 or even 2,000. And of course, in Europe, in a bunch of countries in Europe, it's already 2,000. The countries that's 2,000 in and less, I think 1,500 maybe in Spain. Spain's a special case. Spain is a country that's had bail-ins. And that there's a bail-in law in Europe called the BRRD, Bank Recovery and Resolution Directive, that says, you know, here's how a bail-in will happen, blah, blah, blah. We'll take a percentage of your deposits, etc. Because of the examples in Spain where people have a bank gets into trouble, get this, straight away the Spaniards are smart enough to pull their money out because they're trying to avoid bail-in. There's now a process that the European Union's going through to change that bail-in law to introduce capital controls. Right, so before a bank reports it's in trouble, there's controls on it. People can't pull their money out, right? And they're protected by this 1,500 limit anyway. You know, where there's only a limit to what people can pull out. So this is the point. They need to for crazy policies like bail-in work. They need to trap people in the system, right? And that's the intention will be to do that. They've already said one thing we've got to look at is they said why 10,000? Well, 10,000 is the AUSTRAC money laundering, anti-money laundering threshold. And they've said the cash limit in the economy should be tied to that. So over here, while we're looking at what the government might be doing here, over here, AUSTRAC might be persuaded to reduce it to 5,000 or 2,000. Straight away, that can affect the cash limit in the economy, right? And we're more and more trapped into the system. So here's now. So reason enough to fight very hard on this, Martin. Mm. That said, I have to mention there's a new reason has emerged on why we should fight this, which is that our dear friend John Adams has just announced that if this law passes, he will conduct live on YouTube a cash transaction above $10,000 just to test the law. So, if you don't want John Adams to go to jail, help us stop this law.
or if you do, no, we better not go there.
Well, that's all I said to John. He has told me, John has a lot of contacts among politicians. He's telling them all he's doing this. Yep. And I said, you've introduced a conflict of interest. What makes you think they won't want you in jail? Right? You see, he stays on their case enough. But anyway, and John may do that. But that aside, this is the issue. So what I really want to emphasize to people, and you know, if those regular viewers will know that you and I, Martin, have talked about this quite a bit, because we always say these things that the cynic in the population says, oh, yeah, but none of that works, right? Well, it's all about, to be frank, it's all about numbers. So we flooded the Royal Commission with submissions for bank separation, remember, you know, and as a policy that we supported, and we got over 1,000, right? But you know, that was a slightly technical thing. Again, the two major parties though weren't interested in going there. But we've set a foundation for what might happen. But there are issues that come along that have far broader traction. And I think this is one of those, right? Mm-hmm. Already, you know, your show has set an all-time record for views that you did with John on this.
Yep.
That tells you something, right? We've been flooded with contacts from people once we put out our press release about this the other day, right? This has really got people's attention. We've got members of Parliament that have already said, you know, we want to oppose this law, right? So they're all prepared, ready to go. But the real issue is going to be if this bureaucratic process in the next 2 weeks, which normally gets about 30 submissions when they do an exposure draft on this bill, if we can literally swamp them, right? It's not about, to us, it's not about convincing Treasury. They're, you know, there's probably people in there that secretly think it's crazy, but others will be, you know, signed up to it. It's about swamping them. They have to disclose how many submissions they get, right? That sends an initial message to the members of Parliament that there is a lot of public anger about this. And that process closed on the 12th of August. So the main thing I want to urge everyone to do, that we're asking everyone to do, send an email to that Treasury submission process. Just send an email, right? We've got people sharing their submissions with us. Some are really simple, some are really complex. I just quoted to you from a submission that was put out 2 days ago from a gentleman in Adelaide, a really, really good submission, right? He's researched the subject really well. And I didn't know about this Friedrich Schneider until I read a random person's submission from Adelaide, right? So that's effective, but even more effective is the numbers. So don't listen to us and think, yeah, that's not worth doing. No, it is worth doing. We'll put the email on the bottom of the post here. Click on it, write an email saying you object to this law, state your reasons why, and send it off, right? They will, if we can flood them in the next 2 weeks, that'll be huge. Absolutely huge. There's a few other things people can be thinking about doing. The other thing I really recommend people do is make sure you let them know that you see this as interconnected with bail-in, because they're trying to deny what bail-in will be, right? We can't let them get away with that. And we're laying the groundwork to get an amendment passed in Parliament that can change that bail-in law. So you can sign a petition now on our website that we've talked about here before. Go to our website. We can put the petition link. Sign that stop hands off our cash, stop bail-in petition, right? We will get these petitions to members of Parliament before Parliament resumes in September, right? Make a big splash with them. And the third thing that people should be thinking about doing, but only after they've made their written submission, is contact their member of Parliament. The reason I say only after this, you know, this first process is very important. Make sure you do that written submission to Treasury. But then we've got 5 weeks to get onto members of Parliament and just harass them. And I mean harass them, right? And I'll tell you why. I was there when the bail-in law passed on Valentine's Day 2018. I was there with Dr. Wilson Tsai. We had spent 4 months from August to then trying to expose it as much as possible. We had encouraged everyone we knew, called members of Parliament, etc. We got a lot of, we did generate a lot of calls, but it never ceases to amaze me how ignorant members of Parliament can be. And those laws went through with, you know, 7 or 8 people in the House of Representatives, 7 or 8 people in the Senate. That's it. And they didn't go to a vote in either case, and they'll just wave through. And most of the rest of the people in the building had no idea what was going on. That week, Barnaby Joyce was in the news because of his affair, etc. Everyone was going crazy. These MPs get distracted by a million things, right? You might think you as an individual are harassing them. That's good. Feel that. Because if you are, you may be getting through. If you're not, you may not be getting noticed, right? But get on the blower. Call your member of Parliament. Get on the website. Call this. Every person lives in a state with 12 senators. Call them. Call those 12 senators, right, so that we leave no stone unturned before Parliament will come back on the 9th of September. And if Morrison's plan is to do this thing quickly, quietly now, and introduce the bill on the 9th of September while no one's paying attention, we can already have that part beat. And then it's just a case of, you know, the members of parliament doing the right thing under duress from the electors.
Yeah, and it's worth saying, Robbie, if you stand back and think about this, you know, there's been a whole series of developments over the last 5 or 6 years where effectively civil liberties have been slowly eroded. And, you know, if you look back now where we were compared with where we were, essentially, there are in so many areas, freedoms are just less than they were. And, you know, there's a stronger controlling force at the center. You know, the political and security forces sort of strongly aligned. And I'm not being alarmist, but I think it's really important that we really try and put a stake in the ground here and say, this is a step too far. This is actually taking us down a road that we as Australians don't believe is appropriate and right for us as a country. And the excuse about stopping, you know, anti-money laundering or stopping, you know, tax leakage is just so thin that people can see straight beyond it. So I think it's really important that we do react and respond, which is one of the reasons why, you know, John and I and you have taken taken this to the fore, as it were, because we think this is a really important point of principle as well as a specific legislative question.
Yep, exactly. And I'll give you a quick example of what you said. You know, in 2002, our organisation worked very hard to fight John Howard's first raft of anti-terrorism laws, and it was all, the excuse was, it's all about terrorism. You know, we had 9/11, and, you know, it was a hard argument to wage, really. You know, everyone was scared of terrorism. And we said, look, these laws are so broad, terrorism is the almost the least of it, right? And we said to, I used to say to all the prejudiced people, you know, who thought, you know, anything against Muslim terrorists was justified, I'd point out, look, there's no, the word Muslim is not in the law anywhere. These laws apply to everybody. And so who were the most casual about it and apathetic? The media. And we saw earlier this year what happened, which we warned about in 2002. These laws were used, these very laws were used against the press for doing something which was even, frankly, a bit pretty tame. Nothing compared to what Julian Assange has done, etc. And yet they still get raided. Annika Smethurst still has big burly guys going through her undies drawer. Right. So, and they are all of a type, as you said. There's a, our freedoms are being taken away from us. But the issue in 2002 was people fell for the pretext. Right. Just take stock that the people who are giving us this argument now, frankly, are the same entities, are the same interests. Don't fall for the pretext. If you don't accept the pretext, fight the bill. And Parliament, you know, if they get enough heat on them and it becomes a matter of electoral survival, they start seeing it in those terms, we can actually be quite influential. They get away with a lot of rubbish because the public is often distracted, right? So focus on this and don't take your focus off until we stop it.
No, spot on, Robbie. And, you know, the point there is there's a thing called misdirection, right, which is what magicians do all the time. So they say, oh, go and look over here, right, and they're doing something over the other side. And I think misdirection is what's going on here with this particular bill. And the real agenda is all about greater control. It's about basically laying the foundations for negative interest rates and all of the other financial shenanigans that goes on, none of which is actually good for Australia or Australians. So now is the time to act.
So fight for your rights and fight to keep John Adams out of jail.
Robbie, thanks very much. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, man.
Cheers.